back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Dr. Bryce Edwards, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mikey.
How are you today?
Rather nervous and embarrassed.
How come?
You've just talked about a Kate Hawkesby column that I think we're about to talk about, and I haven't read it.
We're not going to talk about it. Don't worry. There was nothing to talk about. Let's just talk about a nice informative column like your one about the census which was taken online, predominantly, even though I did mine manually actually last year, but it was taken online a year ago, and we found out sort of earlier this week that the Department of Statistics has said, no, we just don't, it's not ready. We don't want to tell you why it's not ready. Oh, and now they're sort of having to tell us. Bryce, tell us what's happened.
Okay, so yes, every 5 years we have the census, and most countries have them, and they go and ask everyone who they are, lots of details about themselves.
Why do we have them, though, Bryce? Before we...
It's mainly so the government can sort its shit out. It knows by the answers to this what needs to be done, because they know where everyone lives, they know, who needs schools, who needs hospitals, do we need, to put more, housing in this area, or, do you know what I mean? It's like... It just gives a big picture of the facts, and it gives details about, where wealth lies in New Zealand, and, or just lots of different details. And so all the different government departments can say, aha, so we need to do this here and there and do that. And it shows sort of trends about, ageing populations and, our ethnicity and, what we believe in even. So it's...
What a great idea if everybody fills it in. If everybody fills it in, then everyone fills it in accurately.
Yeah, and New Zealanders traditionally are kind of pretty good at this, The government tells us to do something and we do it, and they hand us a piece of paper and a pen and we fill it out. But, of course, times are changing, and so the government, quite rightly, I think, thought, a few years ago, don't people want to do these sort of things online? Can't we make it easier for everyone if they can just, log on and do it? And so they set up the census for March last year to be a digital first project, in the sense that you could still fill it out with pen and paper, but they wanted people primarily to do it online. Yeah. And so they thought, online, you can do it cheaper, can't you? So they cut the budget for the census. They thought, normally we hire about 7,000 people to wander around the streets, and knock on people's houses and make sure they're filling out these forms. But because they'll all be doing it online, let's cut it down to about 1,000 or 2,000 people to do that job on census day. And it was just unrealistic and underfunded. And so it turned into an absolute debacle. With what we're seeing at the moment is the stats are coming out on the census, which show about 500,000 people didn't fill it out, and about another 250,000 didn't fill it out completely.
I'm trying to remember why we ended up filling ours out manually, and I think maybe because I just can't remember.
You had the choice, and
it was quite a long time later. It was like we got it in sort of like the last day before you had to get it in. In the end, someone came round, and I think I can't remember, but it was like you say a debacle. So what does that mean? I mean, that's a massive, expensive mistake to make.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, because all the government departments and, the building of hospitals and all those sort of things depends on this, all those government departments and, various researchers are a bit pissed off, and they're not sure that we can rely on this new data. I mean, for a start, the data hasn't arrived. Yep. Normally it would have arrived by now, and the Statistics New Zealand would have been putting out reports and giving lots of hefty data files to people, but they haven't done it, and that's kind of because they don't know what to do, and they're trying to fix up this data because they've worked out that it's missing about 10% of the population. And I should point out, of course, when you're missing 10% of the population, you might just be able to think, let's just add another 10% to all these figures. But you don't really know who the people were that weren't that missed out on filling out the form. Was it just the average person, or was it a certain type of person?
Yeah, you bring up, you mentioned in the article, say, for a DHB, for a hospital, for them to think that in their area they need to service this many potential people, and then suddenly there's another 25% or 10%, even 10%
That's
more.
That's right. And so a lot of researchers think that the type of people, for various reasons, that might not have participated will tend to be poorer people. They might be Maori. They might be other disadvantaged people. And therefore, the whole system is going to be set up, you know, all these decisions are going to be made on the basis of those people being kind of invisible. And so it could make life much worse for those people, essentially, if those new services aren't provided. So it has been an absolute debacle, and but the argument over the last week or so is a bit different. It's not so much about providing the data, it's about basically Statistics New Zealand fessing up and telling Parliament, well, this is how many people didn't fill in the forms. This is how many people were incomplete in filling in the forms, and they haven't wanted to provide that detail to Parliament,
yeah.
I guess because they're a bit embarrassed or something. But Parliament have said, no, we're the boss, and we can charge you with contempt of Parliament if you don't do this, which means we could put you in jail, essentially.
and so whose fault is it? Who do we blame? Who's the person that we blame? One person? Come on, that's what New Zealanders do.
It has become a bit of a political football with, you know, people pointing the finger at different sides. Obviously, Labour and National are the ones that... Well, they kind of have to wear it, and they're blaming each other.
Right.
Of course, it was under a National government that the decision was made to shift online, and the funding, the initial funding decisions were made. Then, of course, we had a change of government. We had then James Shaw taking over as Minister of Statistics, and he didn't seem to make any big changes to what National decided. So. And he was the person overseeing it, so National will therefore say he was responsible. And in the end, the actual statistics department seemed to have made some pretty strange decisions. So there's a lot of people there that, I don't know, their heads should be rolling, I guess.
Yeah.
But there seems to be no accountability at the moment.
On the ground, the people that came and took our manual census were really nice. That's all I can say. They're really lovely people.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a plus. So I mean, are we just not ready for an internet one?
Let's go.
I mean, is New Zealand not as we're not as on the money as we think we are? Is that what the case is? Could there be there'd be a lot of people in the rural areas there who don't, in the central city, who just don't want that internet. Don't know how to do it.
No, I'd like to be a bit more optimistic than that. I think it was generally a good idea to shift to this digital first approach, but they just didn't put the resources in. Like people, there was no advertising. You know, people weren't followed up if they weren't completing the census. There wasn't enough staffing for it. So I think the government, both governments, Labour and National, were just very complacent about it and just thought, oh, well, she'll be right. We've heard about this new internet. Let's leave it to that to sort out.
All right.
And you kind of can't do that.
So let's talk guns. Wee! Who would have thought? Remember, Bryce, all that time ago when I first talked to you and we were talking about what a lame or boring election it was going to be, and now here we are talking about gun control. Who would have thought, for a start? But I'm going to get your thoughts on the decision to be made, and people are chucking all sorts of figures around, and it's going to hurt who, and it's, who do you think is going to suffer, or do you think there's just a lot of wailing going on?
Well, I mean, we're hearing a bit of the wailing from the gun lobby, but I've been quite amazed at how...
And there is quite a lobby at that lobby, by the way.
Well, there is, and I don't know about you, but you know, sometimes you know we get in this kind of urban liberal bubble where we don't really realise that people do own guns, because I don't really see people around the street, you know, my neighbours having guns.
Yeah.
But I guess out in the provinces, you know, in urban New Zealand, I mean, sorry, rural New Zealand, guns are a much more central part of life.
Yeah, and, these particular type of guns, though, this is what I was asking Paula Bennett yesterday.
Right.
These particular type of guns aren't, they're not sort of the go-to default rural gun. These are people who like guns, you know, it's like, who really like guns, they go, brow, brow, you know, it's like horrible.
Yeah, well, those people are a very small minority, I think.
But are they, though? This is what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, it's hard to work out. I mean, we've seen the lobby groups over the last couple of weeks, and to be honest, I think I've been surprised how little noise the gun lobby has made, in a sense.
Maybe because the government's moving too fast for them?
That's partly the theory. And some gun control advocates from Australia told the New Zealand government, look, you've just got to move fast. If you move fast, you won't allow the gun lobby enough time to actually fight back. And so that's kind of how it seems to have played out, that just by doing this with speed, these people have been, the opponents have been just left in the dust. And yes, there's been a bit of whining and moaning, but I don't really think that's kind of got the cut through. And New Zealanders, I think, have just been so shocked by what happened in Christchurch that they just don't want to listen to the gun lobby.
Well, I just don't find the argument strong enough. The argument's weak. We need to, say if we need to kill lots of pests, all of that's the best one I've heard.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's about it.
But, I mean, what's interesting is that isn't even cutting any ice with the National Party. And the National Party are the party of farmers, of rural New Zealand, and they are coming out and saying, we don't care. So I think that's quite significant.
All right, and let's talk Shane Jones just as a final hurrah. Bryce? Shane Jones is a member of New Zealand First. He has been gifted $1 billion, times three, to spread around the country for good reasons, to do good things with. And this is partly to appease the coalition partners, New Zealand First, by Labour. And is it working, Bryce, or are we starting to see some real terrible, terrible blundering from this Minister of the Crown?
Well, it's not working for New Zealand First, which is the important part. Yes, it was set up so that they could go around the country and revive the regions, pump some money into these places that are struggling. And, New Zealand First was trying to become a kind of provincial party, but they're still kind of 2% in the polls. So clearly this hasn't worked out well for them. There haven't been many success stories coming out of this provincial growth fund. Instead, it's mostly been some kind of dodgy stories coming out of it. And, of course, in the end, Shane Jones, he's a really colourful, interesting politician.
He's freaking me out because he's starting to get more colourful. Every time I listen to him talk, I think he's turning more and more into some sort of crazy Blackadder character.
I was thinking more a Trump character, but yes, you're right. something from Blackadder, yes. But that's quite deliberate on his part. And, the more that he gets these kind of negative headlines, I think the more he loves it. Because, of course, New Zealand First, they don't mind being called a bit, corrupt or, dodgy or so forth. They just want, provincial New Zealand to hear that they're trying to do something and that New Zealand First are willing to bend the rules, to help the people. And so that's what Shane Jones has to do over the next year because, it is only just over a year until the next election.
Have they got a chance even next election then? It's 2%.
Well, if there is a chance, I think it does. The responsibility lies on Shane Jones's shoulder. He really is the future of the party. I think we're going to see that he's going to take over eventually if the party survives from New Zealand, from Winston Peters. And Winston Peters, of course, being the Deputy Prime Minister, can't really go out and be the colourful character he used to be.
No.
So that lies with Shane Jones, and so we're going to keep on seeing a lot more from him in the next 12 months.
In your considered opinion, Dr. Edwards, do you see New Zealand First being part of a government next time around? Whomever wins. You do?
I think so. Well, I think there's probably a 60-65% chance that they'll be back into Parliament. And yes, it's very likely that they'll be the kingmaker again.
Oh, I was going to say, there you go. Then Shane Jones goes from being caught watching dirty movies to being the kingmaker. Well, that's got to feel good for Shane Jones, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Dr. Bryce Edwards, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Always a pleasure to get your esteemed views on the wonderful world of politics.
Nice one, thanks.
Thanks, Bryce.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.